So glad to have you on the call. I was just wondering to start, maybe you can share a little bit about your journey and what brought you to Berkeley. I know you were working as an architect in New Jersey and did have a 9-to-5 job, and what prompted you to move to Berkeley? And I'm sure you were introduced to yoga before. You can maybe tell us a little bit about that and a little bit about your journey that brought you here.
So the story. Just before I start, I just want to say that I am so appreciative and so honored to be on this call and to be the guest today. And I feel that in a way these calls are so amazing because basically anybody has a really amazing story to tell. And when we're talking about building community, this is it. I mean, just people getting together with a particular intention to me is really the simplest way of defining how communities start and how communities are built. It's that intention that really gets the ball rolling. So I'm really, really fortunate and feel very grateful to be on this call today. I guess my story, so how I ended up on the West Coast. You're right. I was working at a 9-to-5 job in New Jersey, and I was actually doing landscape architecture, which is very similar to architecture in the field of design. And I was pretty happy there. But I didn't feel there was a sense that I wasn't quite reaching my maximum potential. There was a sense that I was just wading in the water, not really going anywhere. There was no trajectory. There was no energy that I felt myself holding back from my life, not really putting forth all the energy that I knew I could, because it didn't seem like there was a way to break through. It was like I was stuck a little bit. So I ended up taking a 9-month training in something called neuro-linguistic programming, which was just a style of communication, of learning how to communicate with other people better. And I made the intention, I really said it very consciously, that at the end of these 9 months, I will have gotten out of my job, which was, it's one piece of the puzzle. Would have gotten out of the job and would have discovered a path or a way or a direction for me to head. That was more in line with what my intentions were, which was really to, at the time, I wasn't actually sure what my intention was for my life. So 9 months went by, and within the last month of that, I went on a call with a life coach. And this life coach was great. He only asked me one question. He just kept repeating it over and over again. He said, "What is the purpose of your life?" Just that simple. What is the purpose of your life? First time he asked me the question, I didn't really know how to respond. So I said a bunch of sentences. I talked for like 2 minutes. He says, "That's very general. What is the purpose of your life? Be more specific." I tried again. And then I tried again. And then I tried again. And then I tried again. And 45 minutes we went like this. And finally, he said, "Okay, you're making a little bit of progress. Go really work on this." So I hung up the phone, and for the next 2 days, all I did was think about that question. Really, really seriously consider the question. I wrote about it, I thought about it, I dreamt about it. And essentially, it came down to service. I really, really wanted to serve humanity in the greatest possible way, with the most passion, with the most love that I could muster, and use that as a tool to improve myself as well. So it wasn't just that I was perfect and here's the world and I needed to do something in it, but actually use service and work and whatever it was, cooking, interactions, as a means of being in the world and helping myself grow. It was a two-way street, a circle. And as it turned out, the economy in New Jersey crashed. Part of the economy crashed. I was let go of from my job because we had no more work, And almost simultaneously, a friend who I was visiting at the time on the West Coast said, why don't you move out here? He's been asking me this question many, many times. And finally, I said, you know, I don't have any more excuses. And I ended up on the West Coast. And since then, there's been a big shift in my life. None of the things that I'm doing here I was doing on the East Coast, which I find really fascinating. I have no explanation other than the fact that there's a, for me, a much stronger sense of community out here. And it's both a community that exists and a community that I feel welcome and invited to participate in co-creating.
That's wonderful, Mark. And you're teaching yoga here, right?
Yeah, so on the surface, it looks like I'm teaching yoga. And I think I'm doing much more than that and much less than that.
I feel that
yoga to me is a really big umbrella spiritual practice. And sadly, or maybe not sadly, I've kind of come to terms with that, the fact that yoga for many people is just physical movement. And so that's why I say I'm not really teaching yoga. It looks like that on the surface. But actually, every time I interact with people in that particular setting of yoga, I'm superficially teaching them movement. I'm teaching them how to breathe better, how to feel better. But really what I want to do is point them to provide a space where they can have an experience. And they can have an experience of freedom, peace, of unity with each other, unity with the world. Because I frequently experience that, and the feeling is so amazing. And it is the main motivator. It's the reason that I can keep going every day. It's because I keep experiencing that and reaching for new heights, keep experiencing that sensation and that in-the-moment feeling of connectedness. And so superficially I'm teaching yoga, but deep I have ulterior motives.
Yeah. Be selfish, be generous. Yeah.
Exactly.
I was just wondering if since you are living in an intentional community, maybe this would be a good time for maybe to tell us more about where you're living and maybe try to kind of respond to something that we've been brought up and about authenticity and safety, and how do you try to create such spaces where people can actually be authentic and feel safe and express themselves.
So just briefly to introduce where I live, because as I think about it, it does impact my life significantly. I mean, our home environment really affects our well-being and our sense of connectedness. And so for me, it was important to live with a group of people that shared similar intentions and values. And so in the last year and a half, I've been living in a very intentional house where there are seven of us, and we have a core set of values we all agreed upon in the beginning when we moved in. And we have daily routines that we try to come together to do that mainly include sitting in silence in meditation. And that's a very core piece of the household. But even more than that, I feel that we are all committed to improving ourselves in ways through meditation and through communication. And I think we grow just as much from the silence as we do from the interactions, even though the emphasis is really is frequently in trying to create a space where there is enough safety that we can do this shared practice of sitting in silence. But we have progressively, I've seen a huge evolution in terms of our ability to communicate with each other and communicate with various other people that we invite into the community in all sorts of ways, whether it's guests or people that come over on Tuesday nights. It's very interesting. You know, this idea of community, I feel that we have, you know, as Bill said, this idea of living in a village of 150 people, I think we've strayed really far from that. And I've had an interest in intentional communities for a long time, and in the past I've thought that, oh, you know, in order to be in an intentional community, you need to be like one of those intentional community hosts, the crazy people that live in the forest and, you know, are separate from society in many ways. And I've come to terms with the fact that that's not the path for me, that I'd much rather be involved in society and really be in the thick of it, and at the same time have this protective cocoon in the home environment that allows me to recharge.
And I just
want to add that there's a piece to the community building, which is often, we can often romanticize about what it's like to live in community, especially if it's a physical community, like say you organize a group of 20 people or 10 people. There can be a lot of romantic ideas around what the benefits are, but something that I don't hear brought up a lot is all the challenges that come up. The interpersonal challenges of living with people, the challenges of miscommunication, which just recently I was involved with mediating between two people in my community. So there's a lot there. It's very rich, very complex, and very beautiful to see it evolve and grow. It's like a living organism that is constantly growing and going through growing stages and having breakthroughs, insights. It's really beautiful.
Also, before continuing to ask the next question, a few people have mentioned that it's a little bit hard to hear you, Vlad, so maybe if you could be closer to the phone, or I don't know if there's, you could raise the volume on your phone.
How about now?
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. All right.
yeah, that's beautiful, Vlad. I love the way you describe growing community like a living organism. It just makes total sense. I was just wondering, from your recent experience with trying to mediate this issue that happened between some of your housemates and maybe some other experiences, how do you, like, have you come across an experience where people are coming with fear or they have these walls, and how do you make them feel safe and, you know, make them feel that they can express themselves authentically in a community? Is there something that you do in your community? Are there some practices or something that you, any techniques that you do? So I was just curious about that.
I think the feeling of safety is really important. And I think about it in two ways. I think about safety as being an environmental safety and then an interpersonal safety. Something that I've noticed in my household is the more frequently we get to come together as a group to do fun things or creative things or even educational things, the more we bond with each other, the more feeling of cohesiveness and therefore safety. Because I think inherent in safety is, first, that you are comfortable within yourself, and second, that you trust the people around you and you trust the environment around you. You trust that there's not going to be any harm, and you know that people are caring for you, that there's an attentive awareness of your needs. So the one piece is that we come together and we do things together, and that's been really, really critical in building a safety net where we feel like, oh, we've gone through this experience together, and so now we're bonded in some way, and so I feel safer with you. And then the next piece is much more structured, but in a way more difficult to get at, which is there needs to be a set of processes around both communication, connection, and also conflict resolution. And all of that is part of safety to me, because safety is also, in part, being able to be vulnerable and know that the community or that individual that you're speaking to is not going to laugh at you, is not going to disregard your emotions, is not going to blow you off. It's going to be really there for you and listen. And to have that sort of connection and that safety net, you need to have processes. And so one of the things that we've started doing is we have weekly meetings every once in a while, and we've thought about doing it every other time, is feeling and needs meetings. And in part of that feelings and needs meetings is for each person, so to speak, to be put on the hot seat where they are asked questions. And the whole community creates an intention to really create a safe space for that person to be genuine and open and honest and go as deep as they want to go, and for people to ask questions so that they can facilitate that person going deeper. It's a practice, actually, that we frequently do at Spirit Rock Teen Retreats, and it's by far the most popular exercise, game, whatever you want to call it, that we do. And they always want to do it, and adults love it, too. So that's another way. So both process and also just getting together and doing things.
Thank you. Shifting gears to a little bit of a different kind of community, I know that you've been teaching yoga and mindfulness in assisted living centers, and also you've taught a couple of anger management, I think, courses in San Quentin, if I remember correctly, and some courses to teenagers. So I'm just wondering, from all these are also different kinds of communities of which you become part of for that short period of time when you're there. So I'm just wondering if there are some nice stories or experiences you would like to share, or, you know, of transformation or something inspiring that you experienced.
For a while, I was involved in an organization called AVP Alternatives to Violence Project, and they go into prisons and facilitate three-day workshops to help inmates, who many of them are there for life, to help them overcome the barriers and find alternatives to violence. So one of the stories that comes to mind, it's kind of funny to think about, is an exercise that we did in the class. And so the fascinating thing about AVP is that there's no teacher, there are facilitators. You're not teaching the inmates anything. You are facilitating. You're creating an environment where the learning happens on its own. And I think this is a process that's evolved over the last 40 years with this organization. And so part of the facilitator team is actually people from the inside, the inmates themselves. So it's half outsiders, half inside people coming together to facilitate these workshops. We were doing an exercise where there's a circle of people sitting around, maybe 25 people. In the middle of the circle are maybe 25 or 40 photos, various photos. Every person is told to go and pick a photo that calls to them. So everyone goes and grabs a photo. Then you're told to partner with the person next to you. You have to discuss why you picked the photo, and at the end of 3 minutes or 2 minutes, you have to drop one photo and keep one that you agree on. You do this over and over and over again, and your group keeps getting bigger. So there are more voices, and every time, two photos have to kind of do battle, and the group has to achieve a consensus on which photo they're going to stick with. And so it's a really fascinating process. And the reason that this particular game came to mind was because I was in a group where there was a very strong disagreement There were two really different photos. One of them, this is very pertinent to that population, was of a young African American man standing along the side, along the highway next to his car, being what looked like, I don't know, this is a judgment on the photo, what looked like being interrogated by two police officers. The other was a withered hand of a small child, really malnutritioned, really small, very sickly, being held by a very healthy, firm adult hand. These were the two photos that were competing. And it was fascinating to hear how the group was engaging around these two photos. The first photo of the police officers, the part of the group was saying, well, you know, things are good, we're glad to be in this workshop, everything is going well, but when we get out of prison, this will happen to us. This is the reality of the outside world.
Okay.
The other side of the group was saying, this photo of the adult hand holding the child hand is the story of what we could become, which is hope or love or offering something beneficial to society. And they eventually came to agreement and decided to drop the photo of the police officers. But it was a fascinating, it was a very, very hard decision for them to make.
Okay.
Movement towards something that is what seems like a reality and a harsh reality versus something that they want to dream about or set as an intention of something really positive and benevolent in the world.
Okay.
So, I don't know if that came to mind.
Yeah, no, that's great. Stories are great. Speaking of realities, you know, I know that a lot of the yoga you teach is dana-based and gift economy, and I was just curious to know how you balance your service and also, you know, this reality of making ends meet, you know. So how do you kind of balance your life so that you're able to do both?
You're right that a lot of what I do or that I aspire to do is by dana basis. So at the moment, I would love to do everything on a donation basis. And I think it's both a personal journey for myself to figure out how to do that, and also as a society there has to be a shared value and understanding of what donation is and what it isn't, and how services can be offered for free, and yet it's an energetic exchange. And I think a lot of times in our society, free is seen as having no value or being given away. And I feel that whenever I do things that I say, this is on a donation basis, everyone is welcome. There's no financial barriers to you coming here. I really mean that. And I think the distinction that I make is, at the moment in my life, everything that I offer that is meditation-related, specifically meditation, is on a dana basis. So the classes that I teach, those I'm paid for, and the privates that I do with people, those I am also paid for. But the meditation coaching that I do one-on-one, that is strictly on a dana basis. So I don't know. It's still a hard thing. You know, I still struggle with it because I live very simply, and still, you know, you have to pay the bills, you have to pay rent, you have to do all that stuff. I don't have a good answer.
Yeah, but you're trying. I was just curious, what does your family think of your choices and these decisions? Sorry to hit you with so many realities at the same time.
I'm very fortunate. My family pretty much supports me all the way with what I'm doing. I think they see the benefit, or I think they imagine that there is some benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I've been interested in meditation and yoga and various things for about 13 years now, and I've been telling my parents about the benefits of meditation and yoga for this long. And just finally, in the last maybe 3 years, my mother has finally started to practice a little bit. And she's phenomenally better than she was in terms of physical and emotional and well-being. So I think they're really supportive because they understand that this is a choice that I'm making, and they see that I'm happier doing this than I was before, so they support me in that.
Yeah. And it was a sweet story you shared with me when we were chatting a couple of days ago, that since you're interested in Ayurveda and you've been trying to practice it for some time, your mom was asking you for Ayurveda recipes, right? I was really touched to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good sign. I also know that you're planning something big. Compassionate Leaders, is that? Can you tell us something more about that? What's the goal? Is it like a workshop? Or I just have some idea, but I don't know the details. So if you could just tell us more about this program, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, and so this is a program that I've been thinking about something like this for a while now, but it just all came together about 6 months ago. A friend of mine who also teaches meditation and works a lot with youth, her and I started talking about doing a program for youth that involves service, mindfulness, and leadership. And it's coming to fruition. We're going to be launching a year-long program for high school juniors and seniors. It's a once-a-week program that involves the teens, with our help, creating their own service project in the community. Us coming together as a group to practice mindfulness, to learn about mindfulness, and members of the community coming into the classroom space to teach workshops on leadership skills, public speaking, organizational skills, writing, technology, social innovation. And there's going to be a money component involved as well. They have to fundraise a decent chunk of money by the end of the school year in 2014 so that we can all get on a plane and fly to Mexico to spend 2 weeks working at a foster, what is that called, a foster orphanage, Mexico.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is actually in connection with another organization, our parent organization in Idaho. And hopefully the kids from Idaho, the teens from Idaho and the teens from the East Bay will meet in Mexico to work together.
Mm, that's wonderful. Yeah,
so it's really exciting. We're launching in October.
Yeah, it'll be great to hear more stories in the future. So really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I think it's actually 5 to 10. So I'm going to go ahead and turn on the Q&A.
So Vlad, since what I remember of you the most, living in the same house, is how you were always positive, and I'm sure you have your ups and downs. And I was just curious, how do you deal with uncertainty and anxiety and all these negative emotions and always try to be upbeat?
I think my greatest tool is noticing and being aware. I think that there is so much beauty all around us that we frequently miss. And I notice in myself whenever I'm fearful or anxious or whatever negativity there might arise, it usually stems from me just not being present, not really being noticing what's around me, noticing what's within myself, within my body. And so really my practice, the very core center of my life is to both witness what's going on within and then turn the eye outside and see the similarities and see the connections and notice just the simple patterns in the leaves, the beauty in the flowers. And lately I've been living in a very urban area, and so I'm even noticing in myself that there's a slow-growing appreciation for even the things that we typically think of as being ugly or dirty. I find that there's a simple beauty in those things as well. So I always just come back to myself and to the environment and just back and forth, back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it keeps me going.
Mm-hmm. That kind of relates to a question that I had, Vlad. This is Aji. On kind of, you've experienced a range of lifestyles from being on the East Coast, you know, working a 9-to-5 architecture job, being married, to being single on the West Coast, working kind of a more freelance schedule, and on a more kind of donation or gift basis. I was wondering, and then you also mentioned that you're a lot happier now and that your family's noticed that you're a lot happier now than you were before. So I was wondering, what kind of edges are you balancing today?
So I think the latest edge that I've been balancing is...
Or on the flip side, what, the opposite of an edge, I guess. Like, what are the edges, and then what are the kind of the parts of your lifestyle or your life that make you feel very alive?
Right. I know, I do. I want to answer your first question. I'm just trying to find the words precisely. I just want to relate a brief story. Here's the story about an edge that I'm playing with lately. A couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to be in Manhattan. And, you know, going into Manhattan is really, it's quite an experience because it's just so loud and so big and so noisy. And so I find myself in settings where there is that much stimulus coming in at me that I tend to shut down a little bit. It's a safety mechanism, really, that keeps me sane. And I find that quite the opposite, that when I'm in a natural environment, when I'm in a forest or around a small group of people, I become more open. Mm-hmm. And so the edge that I've been playing with for the last while is to put myself into situations that are somehow less than ideal, whether it's coming out of the subway and straight into, you know, Fifth Avenue, in Manhattan with all the noise and the people and the bright lights and everything, just all at once accosting my senses. And in that moment, really open up. Or open up little by little. Little by little by little. As I walk down the street, there's tons of people bumping and all that. I just open my heart more and more and more, just the way I do when I walk into a forest or if I'm walking in a really beautiful place. I try to be as open in Manhattan as I am in my living room, sitting on the couch, speaking with a close friend. And that's the growing edge for me.
Hi, Vlad. This is Vinaya. This is such a beautiful call. Thank you so much for your beautiful and honest reflections. My, more than a question, it's more of a reflection. I loved what you said about how your mom has taken to meditation, and you've been practicing yoga and meditation for so many years now, and it's really just in the last 3 years that she has started practicing meditation. I find that so inspiring, and I'm sure that, you know, she's inspired and encouraged and motivated from the seeds you've sown and from the example that you've set. So I just wanted to know about that experience, how your mom kind of got on the journey. I would love to hear more of you know, just how was she able to make that shift? I'm sure, obviously, it has to do with you, but also how did that come about? Were there kind of some thoughts that, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. It actually came about as a result of a death.
I'm sorry, result of what?
A death. It revolved around my grandparents, her parents, both her mother and her father, passing away, moving in with us on the East Coast, living there for a little while, short while. They were quite old. And then successively, first my grandmother and then my grandfather passed away within 6 months of each other.
Mm.
And it was quite hard on my mom. And I was there for part of it to support her, and then I had to leave to go back to the West Coast. And she went through a real slump, you know, as completely understandable. She was really unhappy and really sad and really depressed that she had lost her parents, even though my grandfather was 87, my grandmother was in her early 80s. And, you know, they had a very full life. So I think partly motivated, influenced by me, because I've been saying for years and years, okay, you need to do this. You need to take care of yourself. You're not taking care of yourself. And in part also as a reaction or a reflection that life is short, that life can take us in any direction, really, and death is just right around the corner for any of us in any moment. I think that was really the main motivator for her. But she started realizing that, oh my God, I need to do something for me.
Mm.
And she started going to yoga. And actually, meditation is just now starting to peek its head through. She just called me about 2 months ago after an injury, actually, where she started going to various doctors, started going to an Ayurvedic specialist, and he told her, you need to start meditating. And, you know, the fact that I've been telling her that for years maybe has a little bit to do with it, but the fact that she heard it from someone else. So now she's getting really into it, and yoga is a part of her weekly routine and daily life, and hopefully meditation will become so also.
Mm. It's great, again, how you planted those seeds and inspired her. I'm sure it's made it easy for her. Thank you so much for doing that and for being you.
Hi, so this is Vipin. I had two questions. One was, if you could just speak a bit more about how you, when you made that shift from the East to the West Coast and you wanted to help people find their highest potential, how is that manifesting right now? Or all the work, the teaching yoga and the meditation sessions which you're doing, how do you believe or how do you understand that that's how you're helping them serve their highest potential? And my second question would be about, again, community. And I'm beginning to understand, at the end of the day, if you break down community, what we are really at, you know, at the heart of it is connection, right? How do you connect with someone else at a very deep, personal, real level? But so much, you know, in the ear, you know, you go to a party or you go to a gathering of people, all of us are doing the so-called famous small talk or the cocktail conversation. And I was wondering if you have any suggestions or ideas on, in a cocktail conversation setting, what is that nature of invitation or intent which one can offer that conversation becomes much more deeper and meaningful and real and personal feel for people? Those are my two questions.
Okay, great. I'll answer your second question, and then I have a question about your first question. So whenever I find myself, I completely know what you mean about, you know, totally, community is connection. And actually, when you said that, I thought, if you live in a forest and every day you go and hang out in a circle of stones, do those stones become your community? It's just an interesting thought. Does it have to be human? Does it have to be about speaking? Or can it be truly about connection, of feeling connected, of feeling like belonging? So that's an interesting exploration. But in regards to small talk and parties and conversations, you know, so often I would, in settings occasionally, less so these days, possibly because I've just narrowed my life down to the scope of the world that I revolve in, little bubble that I'm in. But in the settings where chit-chattering is happening, you're talking about nothing particularly important, no one really cares that much, but it keeps the flow going and we feel like we're connecting on some level. You know, sometimes I'll just, usually it starts with the question of what do you do? Very, very common question. What do you do? And I almost never say I teach yoga and meditation. That's too boring. It's just not a very interesting way of opening up conversation. And so usually I'll just invent ways to rephrase what I do so that it becomes an open-ended question that others can engage in. So I'll say, well, I create things, or something like that. And then I invite people, I immediately flip it on them and say, what are you passionate about? Like that, I love that question. What are you passionate about? It's so disarming for people. Because you can't say, oh, I'm not interested in that. That's a boring question. No one can say that. You ask someone, what are you passionate about? The hardest response you'll get is, I don't know. Usually that's not the case. Usually people just open up. They love to talk about the passions in their life, much more so than the small things. So that's a question that I love to phrase to people. And to answer your second question, I'm not sure what you mean, and so I want to ask you, do you mean how do I know if I am following my set intention of helping people reach their maximum potential?
Yeah, I guess, so thank you for that first answer to that first question. I'm going to definitely try it the next time I find myself in such a situation. But I guess the place where I was coming from is that part of your life deeply resonates with me. And I feel like I've always told myself that's what I want to do. And I feel like this sense of restlessness in my life to do more, you know, about helping people get in touch with their highest potential. But I'm guessing I'm confused or stuck at the place of saying, I don't even know what does that mean. Like, how do you manifest it? Do I mean like quit a job and go do Vipassana for 6 months? I don't know what that means, right? So I was asking from a place of how does that mean, what is the meaning which you're deriving from the work which you're doing right now under the hope that there might be some clues for me there, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, a part of it has to do with what motivates you. What, again, it's that question of what are you passionate about? Because helping people reach their maximum potential, it could mean anything. It could mean I help people, I work in, I don't know, a center where I teach people English. And as a result of that, they can be better integrated into society. I think that what you actually do in terms of the day-to-day skills, I sit at a computer, I speak to people, I teach this or I do that, I don't think that matters as much as how you see it in the bigger picture, of how you relate to my little piece of what I do helps the world or helps certain group or helps even one individual in this one instance move towards a place of enlightenment, of more peace, of more joy, of being more fulfilled. So there's that. It's the relational. It's the process. It's the attitude. And then there's just knowing yourself and testing. Do experiments. Find out what makes me come alive. Is it the job that I'm doing right now? Is it serving in a kitchen? Is it going out and handing out flyers from Vipassana centers? I don't know, but just figuring it out. And we don't have to know it. We don't have to even try to guess. You just keep doing things. And you explore in different diagonals, in different directions. Think of it as a glowing star, and the rays shoot out in different directions. You go in a certain direction, all of a sudden it feels like, yeah, this is the flow. I feel good here. So you do a little bit more of that. And eventually you find the direction that really aligns with your skills and your passions and where you're meant to go. And who knows? Who knows where it'll take you? It could take you to a 9-to-5 job. I'm not against 9-to-5 jobs at all. I think they're really wonderful, as long as you're aligned. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, thank you. That's definitely something to chew on.
Hi again, Vlad. This is Jan. I was on your website, and I see in addition to the things we're talking about, your mindfulness training, your yoga, you're also doing things like, I believe you're doing nutritional counseling and a number of different modalities to meet people where they are. Is that correct?
Less nutritional counseling. I'm calling it holistic yoga therapy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
But even working with that, I wonder if you could speak a little bit about how one can enhance their sense of self-compassion through caring for themselves physically. Very frequently within the service space ecosystem, we often have conversations in which we talk about our love of service, but then somehow, some way, it turns around to, but you know, I still struggle with having compassion for myself. And I'm wondering if through more physical practices, such as yoga, you have found that it enhances one's compassion for oneself.
Compassion for oneself. What does that look like for you? What do you mean by that?
In other words, do we become more mindful of our own needs? Do we become more generous towards ourselves if we're paying attention through our bodies rather than perhaps just through our heads?
I think one of the beautiful things about the physical yoga practice is it makes you very aware of your body's needs. It can be really easy to ignore aches and pains when you're not paying attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you're face-to-face in a classroom setting or even in a personal setting where all of a sudden you're really dropping into your body and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, what is this? I didn't know I had that. What's going on here? And it makes you come to face a couple of things. Number one is that the body has very specific needs, and if we don't address those needs for long enough, it will result in some sort of disorder, disease, or some way that the body is going to get your attention. And so when you do these practices that are very physical-based, and it doesn't have to be yoga, it can be Tai Chi, it can be running, it can be any way that you connect with your body. I don't think yoga is the best or the whatever. It's just one modality. It's one that I particularly love, so that's what I do most. But it's just connection, again, connection to your body. Connection to establishing a communication. I think so often we override the body, just as we try to override the mind, and it doesn't really work. I think the mind is particularly resilient and strong, and sometimes the body, we can tell it something, or we can ignore it, and it just finds a way somehow, like the bamboo in my front yard somehow finds a way to get through everything and comes up. The same way, the body's needs make themselves known one way or another, and I think the self-care and the compassion for ourselves comes from tuning in so that you respond to the needs in a way that's healthy and not as a response to your body finally getting sick, because being sick is the body's ultimate way of saying, hey, what are you doing? Take care of me. I need this and this, and you're not meeting my needs, so I'm going to stop you from doing what you're doing so that you can pay attention to me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that piece of it. And I think there's also the piece of practicing love and kindness in the way of towards ourselves. This is a practice that's very frequently done in the Buddhist tradition. And it's beautiful. Just sending love and kindness to ourselves. I try to do this every day in my practice. Not necessarily even sitting, but just, going in and just reflecting of, I care. I'm care about myself, and I care about the world, and the two are not separate. So when I care for myself, I make it more possible for me to be involved and care and be useful in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Great question.
Yeah, that was a great question, Jen, and great answer.
Yes.
There you go. Now we can hear.
Sorry. I didn't get you. I'm sorry. Glad, I'm very interested. Thank you so much for being here, and it's glad to hear what you're. I'm very happy to hear what you're up to, and I'm very interested in the Compassionate Leaders Program, and I'd like to ask more about that. And one question is, what are you currently looking for, or needing in terms of support? And second, to make an offer. You know, I spent a lot of time living many places of the world and in leading workshops and teaching transformational global leadership. And I'm in Santa Fe now, but I'll be relocating to the Bay Area in August, and I would love to offer anything that I have in my experience that you could use.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And specifically, I'd like to ask you a little bit about how you see awareness of the community of humanity as a piece of what you see you might do in your leadership training. And speak specifically to why you're sending people to Mexico. And is there, I have a personal sense that having an awareness of the human community expands our capacity for leadership anywhere, and I'm wondering how you're tapping into that or why you're going to Mexico.
Right. Well, the reason it's Mexico is because our parent organization in Idaho called Flourish Foundation is organizing. For the last 3 years, they've been running this program. In the last 2 years, the first 2 years, it was to India. And last year, they made a connection in Mexico. And so the program now has Flourish, a Compassionate Leaders Program, has groups of teens going to India and groups of teens going to Mexico. And so we're jumping on the bandwagon and joining them in Mexico. So we... There's nothing mysterious about it. We did not even make the decision. It was just there. It was handed to us on a silver platter, which just makes it so much easier for us because we're basically a startup and, you know, we're in the process of creating business plans and registering as a nonprofit corporation with IRS and the state of California and all that crazy paperwork stuff. And Compassionate Leaders, the piece about humanity is really interesting. I feel that when we work on ourselves, we get to know us as an individual. And when you start to strip away the layers of what makes me as a person, as a individual living in a body with memories, with perceptions, and you start stripping away those layers, I find for myself, from my own experience, that I become less of a me and more connected to the communal we. And it's through this practice, I feel, that I become more connected to humanity. And there's another piece to it where exposure to different groups, to different settings, to different environments, to different cultures, to different worlds and languages, that can also open us up. But I think it's incomplete to say that we are connected to humanity because I've been to 10 different countries and spoken this many languages or have seen people living here and here. I think that's not enough. I think we need to really work on ourselves. And that's why the Compassionate Leaders Program does both. It offers opportunities to work on yourself through meditation and then take the lessons that you learn and put it out into the community in terms of service. And then the lessons that you gain from service, you bring back to your cushion. And it keeps revolving over and over and over again.
Fabulous, thank you. That's I started from the external, from the global, in all of my explorations and training. And what I found was exactly what you said, is that you have to go internal and bring the two together. Thank you for what you're doing. And if there's any way I can help, let me know.
Yeah, I would absolutely love your help. We should talk more. I don't know how to connect with you, but maybe through the internet, Facebook, my website. Yes, please. Let's talk. I'd love to speak to you
after the call.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Michelle. And I was noticing, Vlad, that a lot of the answers that you mentioned kind of touch on this bigger picture view of the world, you know, whether it's shifting from that me to we perspective or with the little snapshot of Reverend Hengsher's Interdependence Day instead of Independence Day, and or even just, you know, walking in New York City and just opening yourself up the way you would open yourself up in nature. And I was just wondering, did you always think that way? What made you asking these questions?
I think I've been really, really fortunate in my life to know people who are really open and really kind and really compassionate and are wonderful teachers and mentors. And they've inspired me, and I every day strive, or not even strive, but really let go more and more of effort to try and be something. And instead just realizing every day that it's already here. Like, everything we have, everything that we aspire to, all the greatness, all the, you know, joy, everything, it's already there. It's not really something that, it's like I think about it, and at the same time, then I let go of the thinking. So to answer your question, no, I haven't always been this way. But I've always had people in my life, in my adult life, that have been that way, or I've glimpsed them as being that way. It's very one-sided, of course, because, you know, coming to a meditation group and I see the meditation teacher and he's just, like, glowing, or the yoga teacher that I studied with in New Jersey, and she's always glowing and so bright. Does she have other moments? Probably. I don't know. But the way that I see them, it inspires me, and I think it's so important to have examples of someone that you look up to. And for a long time, actually, the thing that inspired me the most was reading the Tao Te Ching. And I just kept rereading it every day, over and over and over again, the same small, short, little passages that basically just repeat the same message over and over again. Let go, let go, let go.
We'll throw our last question.
Yeah, I was wondering, Vlad, something similar to what Michelle was saying. Is there something we as a community can do to support all the wonderful work that you're doing?
I think you're already supporting it. No, I mean, really, we're creating this together. The Compassionate Leaders Program, me teaching yoga in the parks, me going into senior centers, you hosting these forest calls, Audrey facilitating this. We're all working towards the same thing, I think, just in different ways. And that's the beautiful thing about life, is we each bring something unique, and we each can find a way to intersect it with the other uniqueness that another individual brings.
Mm.
So you're already doing it.
Well, thank you.
And yeah, and, you know, if people have particular ideas or thoughts of how compassionate leaders can become more successful, if they want to share their expertise, we're looking for, as I said, leaders in or people with expertise and leadership of some sort or another to come to the program, maybe do a short presentation or a workshop or an exercise. So we're looking for that in the East Bay Area. So if you're interested, please give me a call, send me an email. I'd love to hear from you.
Great. Yeah, we'll share all the information after the call to everyone who joined, and they can connect with you, and you can connect with Michelle or whoever else you wish to. So thank you. Thank you so much, Vlad, for being on this call and for being such an example for me personally and for so many others. So I'm really grateful to hear all your insights and your journey. And once again, thanks from the bottom of my heart.
Thanks, Jackson. This is wonderful.